live. I'm back. We're all back. It's the Supernatural. We're back in the saddle since I didn't play it. Supernatural Substation, Friday night, United Public Radio Network. It is the 30th of November, which I cannot believe, 2018. For those of you still keeping track, still keeping that diary, I hope, because there's going to be a test at Christmas. Bernadine!
Hey!
We had no show last week because somebody canceled, like, at the last minute.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell with this, okay? You cancel at the last minute, you don't get rescheduled. That's going to be the rule.
That's going to be the rule.
We're laying down the rules. You just don't get rescheduled at all. Unless you're cute and a man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not a cougar. The amusement park is closed. But, you know, I do have a soft spot for a nice looking man. Anyway. Well, here we are. And I'm back. And you're settled in, I think. We've all had so much stuff. I didn't think I'd know what to do when I came back. We were just talking about my trip to my drive to New York. Do you know there is a highway, I-81, and it goes through like Tennessee, West Virginia, or it picks up at Tennessee, West Virginia, Maryland, Georgia, it cuts through there. And at every freaking 18-wheeler of whatever, you know, company you can imagine is on that freaking road. Oh my God. If I never see another 18-wheeler again, I'll die a happy woman. I'm telling you, because they were like, and they would get like in both lanes and just block up the whole thing, you know? But yeah, most of y'all know we drove to New York. It was great. I had a great time. I was just saying the best thing about it was we went to see the Cloisters, which is a Metropolitan Museum. It's part of the museum, but it's away from where the main museum is. And it's all medieval. It has like a castle interior. I mean, I really felt like I was back in England because it was cold and, you know, and it was raining and all. I was in my glory. I was like, that's my birthday present, you know. And they had the famous tapestry there of the unicorn, you know, that you always see with the unicorn in the fence and everything. Mm-hmm. It's or, you know, if people are Harry Potter people, it's in the Gryffindor common room.
Oh.
As I've been educated. Yeah, it hangs on the wall and in there, too. But this was the real thing. And, I mean, they had a lot of stuff. Amanda, my daughter, was with me, and she's like, I get tired of looking at medieval stuff. Me? I never. Sorry. Not of medieval, no. And I was like, boy, I wish I had a house like this. You know. I walked in Canterbury Cathedral, and I wish I lived here. This is so gorgeous, you know. But coming back was was an adventure, let's say. Snow, and it was the record. It was like we're listening on, looking on the Weather Channel when we finally got to a hotel because we, like I was telling you, we were off the road for a while. I'm telling you, you know, God puts angels there. He really does. People can laugh all you want, but this state trooper didn't know we were here. He just happened to be coming along, and we were in the middle of the median, almost in the middle. And the snow, when I opened the door, like, you know, when we went, we had to go to the back seat and get something. Well, frankly, we had to pee in a cup.
So, yay.
2.5 hours, it's cold, you're wet. It's like, I can't hold it no more. I haven't done that since, like, you know, back in the day. But the snow was over the bottom of the car. The only thing that was keeping it from, you know, like freezing up around us was the car was running. So it was an adventure. I love a road trip adventure, but I'm not ready to get, it was so weird. And then driving in New York, it's like, you know, I cowered in the car for like 10 days or no, however many, the 7 days we were there with Amanda driving, you know, I was like, oh Jesus God, this whole city, this, everyone in that city drives like her. She is a New York driver. And I'm like, well, yeah, I'll just throw this sweater over my head. Just like I did in California.
Wish for the best.
Yeah, and hope, you know, and say a prayer and whatever. So, but it was fun. We had a good time. You know, I got to see fall and winter in the same week. Come back down here, it was like 80 degrees. But it was gone for so long that when I got back, I'm telling you, those last few hours, like coming back, I was like, Jesus, how much more do I have to drive? So she's like, I can't drive anymore. So I was like, because we were pushing it because we wanted to get home. So I was like, okay, so I went back to the basics and put Led Zeppelin on. I'm like, just get me home loud, you know, so keep me awake. And none of the slow songs, just all the fast stuff. So when we got back here, I was like, everything looks weird. It looks different. And it takes a minute for you to acclimate. I just felt like, you know, I'd gone across the ocean just trying to get to New York. But we drove through it that night, and believe it or not, she went into the city with a friend, but I had no desire whatsoever to go into traffic and, you know, deal with the city. I wanted to see the Ground Zero, Memorial. I didn't get to see any of that because I didn't care. After having to drive through it when we arrived, it was like, I don't care. I'll see what's on Long Island. Oh, so I went to the Amityville house.
Oh, wow.
It's there, and it's much less impressive in person than you think. And the reason is the movie house is like, it's right across the street. And they've changed it from 112 Ocean Avenue to 102 or something like that to give the people some piece. They have a metal fence that they put up, and they put a private property, and they also have no loitering or standing or stopping like in front of it. But I looked across the street, and the house that they filmed the movie in is right across the street. And it's much bigger. It's actually bigger. If you remember, it has the same kind of windows and, you know, the whole setup, just like this, you know, the original one. But it was really kind of small. I mean, you think about, it's like, oh, it's got to have space between. It's like right on top of other houses, you know. So I got a good picture. I put it on Facebook. I'm like, holy shit, you know. And then I was a scaredy cat. I'm like, I don't want to go get arrested or ticketed in New York, you know. Excuse me, Amityville's not worth it, you know. Oh, come all this way, let's go. I'm like, no. I'm walking on a property. I'm like, don't go up that driveway, you know. I guess I am getting old, but it's like, some woman pulled in and she was like giving us this foul, dirty look. And I was like, let's go. I've had enough of New Yorkers. Honestly. I was drinking something. You know, it wouldn't be me and Amanda, though, or me and you, but you weren't there. If we didn't get in it with somebody. So we stop at a rest stop in Virginia, or West Virginia. It's like when you hit the state line, it's the whatever. And she had to go inside, and I was going to go, but I was taking some trash out of the car, and I was driving. And when the door came open, it didn't even swing, okay? It just kind of, with me moving, it kind of like dip, a little tap on the car next to me, right? And I'm looking, and I'm like, and I see this guy, like, hitting the steering wheel. What the hell is this? So Shrek gets out of the car, right? He comes over and he tells me, he's like, you effing retard. You didn't just do that. You didn't just hit the door. And I mean, I was like, what? I said, well, it was an accident like you. And that was it. That was the word go. And I was like, you want me to hit your car? Because I'll pull it, you know, because I kept doing that with the door. Like, I'll hit your car, you freaking flesh-colored Subaru, right? And he's trying to find it. And there's nothing but dirt all over everybody's car because of the salt and the snow on the road, the salt and the plows and stuff. Everybody's car is dirty. I said, yeah, where is this big dent? Right? And then it just went from there. I don't, finally. Then Amanda comes walking. I'm like, she's like, what's the problem? You know? And she does the nice thing. She's like, how can I, you know, can I offer you any? And he keeps going on calling me. And it's like, you don't know, you know, what I've been through. You know, and I was like, finally, I just told him. He said, you're something. And I said, well, you're an abortion. And I was like, back in junior high. I said, yeah, you're a walking abortion. I said, why don't you shut the F up. And so I was going to stop saying anything. And he starts yelling at her. So I walked back. And he had people that were coming back. Like, there was this man and two women. So I walked back over there. And he's yelling at my daughter. And I'm saying, I said, hey. I said, you see them people? I said, they're miserable because of you. I said, you're a terrible human being. I said, you make everyone around you miserable. I said, everything bad that happens to you in your life is your own effing fault. And Amanda goes, she's right, you know. I was like, get in your car and get out of here before I call the police. So he got in the car, you know, and I was like, get in the car, Shrek. reason number 562, folks, why I do not carry a gun in the car.
carry a baseball bat.
Or a brick. I know. They don't trust me with that either because I throw it out the car. I mean, this was just not. I was like, go away. You know, and I kept hoping that we'd come on him. And I turned around and told him, man, I'd be worried about scratches when he plows into something because he's such an idiot. This car was the ugliest color Subaru that you could. And everybody had a Subaru, I guess, because of the four-wheel drive thing. I don't know. But it was like, well, gee, that's where they sell all these Subarus, you know, mm-hmm. to people in Virginia that look like Shrek. So, road rage, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Road rage. So it was an experience, you know, so, and, I don't know. There wasn't any creepiness about the hotel. There wasn't, you know, there wasn't too much ghost activity other than the, you know, the Amityville thing. I'm sure the museum was haunted, had some haunted things, but, and, you know, we ate and stuff like that. It was fun. We had a good time. You know, well, so that's why awesome. I wasn't here and you and Pete were holding down the fort and I missed Matt Swain. So I'm sorry about that. But we'll get him again, I'm sure. So, and you finally got settled in your new digs, right?
Yeah.
Good. Wow. Yeah. That's great. So everything from here on out. So we got a guy named, what is his name? Mike Ricksecker tonight.
Yes.
And he is a ghost historian. And an author of other books. So I read his bio, and he is a historian, a paranormal historian, or a historic paranormalist. I'm applying titles to him that he doesn't claim. But so it sounds like it's going to be pretty good. He has several books out. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk to him in a few minutes when he gets on the queue. So thank you for scheduling. And anything else? Did you miss?
Yes, I missed you.
I didn't even know there was a Mercury retrograde. There was a Mercury retrograde. And that's why all that crap was happening. Well, no, because like I told you, you know, had we continued on past the point where we went off the road, we probably would have gotten in a serious wreck or who knows what, you know. So everything happens for a reason, folks. Don't try too hard to fight. You know, to fight the flow of things. So we just had to go with it. It was pretty, but it was like, mm-mm.
Yeah. Were you happy to see Louisiana when you finally got back?
It was a blur because it was like 3 a.m.
Oh.
Yep. And I was like, I was happy. Yeah, I was happy to see, but like I said, it had the surreal, like, you know, and of course, because that's how traffic is around us. There's some idiot out at 3 a.m. that's getting in our way. You know, like, there's nobody in the goddamn highway. You know, get away from us. Drive faster, drive slower.
Hi, this is Mike. Sorry, I'm unable to receive your call right now. But please go ahead and leave your name, number, and brief message, and I'll be back with you as soon as possible. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Mike.
At the tone, please record your message. Wait, okay. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Mike, it's the Supernatural Substation and you're not here. Call us back. Mm. Oh, well.
Mercury retrograde.
Yes.
What's the problem, man?
Pete asked me, and Pete Haviland has been like a fill-in from heaven. It's been a real, he's really done a lot for us. So, and I told him, you know, next year, maybe we'll have him on more and we, you know, branch out into some other things, maybe some stuff for the YouTube channel, try and develop it. I know I've got to upload a bunch of, you know, whatever. I'm hoping to get a new computer at Christmas. So Santa or whatever, you know, better deliver something. But
Sorry, I'm unable to read.
Oh, my goodness.
It's all right. Hey, Joe, until you get him, don't. All we're getting is his voicemail.
Yeah.
It'll be all right. I think.
I hope.
Well, anyway. So what's been going on in the paranormal world? I've been off the grid a little bit. Anything new? Anybody opened another Dybbuk box or something?
Not that I know of.
The one Dybbuk box.
Yeah. So far, I don't have cable yet set up at the new place, so still waiting on that. So I haven't been updated with the shows.
Yeah. You're doing well.
And my paranormal stuff, all my equipment's in storage, so I haven't been doing investigations. But I did speak on the radio for Halloween at K-Bon Radio. We did a live show, and I took some of my handheld equipment, and we captured some pretty awesome activity there. Excellent. And then a couple of days later, I did a lecture at UL, the college in Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
And that went pretty well. Yeah, good. Because I have this big speaker now. So when I did my EVPs, and you know, I do have some creepy EVPs.
Yes, I know you do.
So I just, it makes me feel good, you know, when they have a lot of people in the audience and I turn it up really loud. And for the non-believers in the front row, I scare the crap out of them.
Can you hear that now?
Yeah, they were like holding on to their seats. They're like, oh, crap.
And the hair is blowing back while the sound washes over. Yeah. Hey, that reminds me, you were talking about speaking. Paula of Spars Paranormal, who hosted the Gulf Coast Paracon for several years, apparently has been invited back to Beauvoir.
Yes.
The team, I think it was called Shadows with a Z Paranormal, has offended somebody or whatever happened. I don't know the circumstances, but Paula and her team have been asked to come back, and they are talking about a convention. Paula says, last time I talked to her, which I was on the road when she called, she said, we'll see, you know, but I have a feeling there'll be another convention coming up, which is good because I look forward to that one. And, you know, traveling is close. We know everybody, you know, so it's always fun. So we'll keep you posted about that, folks, if, you know, if that does come to pass. But what she is resuming is Meet the Spirits of Beauvoir. And I'm thinking it's in January, but I'll have to check the dates. But it's available. I mean, info is available at Spars Paranormal. It's S-P-A-R-S. Paranormal, just looking in, and they are going to be hosting a monthly Meet the Spirits, which is a monthly investigation open to the public, but I think by ticket, maybe, I'm not sure. But anyway, it's the same thing she was doing in the months preceding the convention. So she'll be back. And I'm sure the spirits, she said something funny. She was like, you know, I'm pretty sure the spirits will be happy to have us back. And that's, you know, that's true, because they had a real rapport with the spirits of Beauvoir. They had, you know, they had gone month after month. And so the spirits knew them by name and were talking to them by name. And, you know, I have to kind of think that perhaps, you know, the spirits may have had their say too. They might have wanted, you know, people that they knew to come back, because they did develop that for a long time before they actually offered it to the public. So when you get a situation right where the spirits know you, it's so much better than coming in cold. Here's a whole new group of people. They're not going to talk to them, you know, I mean, not necessarily, or not to the extent that they did. So I'm looking forward to that. And maybe, and she was talking about something like a workshop or something, maybe some kind of a Saturday thing where you and I could go and, you know, just a small, like small groups for each of the speakers or whatever. So I said, yeah, I'm up for anything to do with that. That's great.
Yeah. So, I think she called me the same day.
Mm-hmm. So who do we have while we're waiting on Mike?
I just texted him. He's answering me right now. Let me see.
Oh, okay. So no, I just got this. I can't find the schedule again.
We have Lucky Bell Camino coming on next week.
Really? For real?
For real. And she's supposed to have moved to Mississippi.
Well, she's not the psychic of the Lizzie Borden.
Oh, Mike said he's sitting right there waiting for the call. Well, crap.
Mercury, you better make sure Joe has the right number. Or maybe Joe, can you? I don't know if Joe can hear us, but I guess he's manning it. We'll give it a try, or maybe see if Joe wants to have him call him, but I think he'd rather Joe call him. Anyway, we've got the guest in the queue.
It's dialing.
Hello,
it's dialing. Mike,
yes.
Hi.
Yay.
Hi.
He's like, hi, who are these two women calling me up? Mercury is retrograde. I didn't know it.
That's right.
But I do
That's
now.
Right. It's all about Mercury.
Yeah. So let's, and then Joe, you know, he's our walking Mercury guy, Mercury retrograde guy. So if he's squared away, he had an issue right before we came on. I'm like, oh my God, no. But I'm Aileen Pistanio, and I know you've been talking with Bernadine LeBlanc, the other half of the hosting on the show. So welcome to the Supernatural Substation.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate being here.
Well, I'm glad that you could join us. I was talking a little bit about some of what you do. You're a ghost historian, and I did have a bio, but I usually like to just have people introduce themselves. So if you could do that, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm Mike Ricksecker. I'm an author, and I call myself a ghost historian, which is someone who researches ghosts and the place in which they haunt. I do a lot of different things. I'm also a paranormal investigator. I'm a publisher. We have a number of books through Haunted Road Media, videographers, and we also have the Haunted Road Media channel out there on YouTube with over 600 videos. I'm also a live stream host with our own show, so there's a lot of things that I'm doing.
Yeah, I'm looking now. I pulled your bio up. You do look very familiar because it says that you were on My Ghost Story and you were on, was it Bio?
Yeah,
My Ghost Story was on Bio.
And I was on The Haunted, which was on Animal Planet.
Which episode were you on The Haunted?
That was Monster in the Closet. That was the first episode of season two.
Oh, okay. I don't know if they do. I really like that show. I like that they brought the animals into play, too. Although they kind of got away from it. But, you know, I kind of liked it where they showed the effect on the animals and everything. So, Bernadine, come on in and talk to Mike, because I know you've been talking to him. So let's bring you in.
Hey, Mike.
Hey,
glad I finally got you on. That's awesome. Did you come up with the word ghostorian? Because I've never heard it before. Is that something you made up?
Yeah, I came up with that because, you know, everybody was calling themselves a researcher. And, you know, there's a lot of different things within the paranormal field that you could be researching, you know, whether it's history or, you know, it could be maybe the occult. You could even be researching technology. There's a lot of different things you could be researching. And like The Haunted had me up there as a historian, but my degree is not in history. And having spent some time in the library industry, I know how particular like librarians can get when you call somebody else that's not a librarian, like somebody at the circulation desk or whatever. So I didn't want to misrepresent or step on any toes of, you know, historians who have a master's in history. So I came up with ghost story and to kind of explain what it is I do.
Well, that's awesome, because you can try to Google it and you won't find it.
No, if you Google ghost story and you'll come up with me.
Oh, that's what I mean. Nobody else has it. That's why I had asked if you had came up with it. Yeah,
that's a good hook to have. And you're obviously, you're interested in history.
Absolutely.
Because I see you've written about the Civil War and other stuff like that. And so I guess that's been, you know, where it's like with historians, they come across a lot of legends and stuff, you know, and I think historians are less skeptical than scientists are, because they, you know, they get the feel of the time, et cetera. So, but where did you begin? I mean, like, were you, when you were little, were you into campfire stories and, you know, urban legends? Did you always, like, have an interest? Or a lot of people have an experience that kind of, like, catapults them into, you know, a whole different reality.
Yeah.
And you were born, where were you born?
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, so, yeah, okay, I'm seeing you're the father of four, and you're a baseball fan.
Yay.
Yeah, I used to play baseball.
Best sport.
Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah, but it's much better than football. It's and the uniforms look nice too. One guy, so I like to, you know, just throw that in there. So, but tell you, how did you get your interest in this?
Yeah, well, with the writing aspect of it, I've been writing ever since I was 7 years old. I always loved creating stories. And back then, I wrote more mystery. I was, you know, at 7 years old, a kid, you know, trying to, mm-hmm. I was trying to mimic the Encyclopedia Brown books. I loved those so much at that time. But I did write some, you know, little ghost stories back then. And if you can believe it, I wrote some historic fiction. And, you know, where the paranormal came into play was an experience that I had when I was about 8 or 9 years old. And I had, it was a shadow person experience where I woke up in the middle of the night and in the corner of my bedroom stood this tall, dark figure. You know, at the time I had no idea what shadow people were. I just thought there was an intruder in the house and, you know, this person had come to kill me. You know, that's what races through your mind when you're 8 or 9 years old, you know? I tried to scream, my mouth opened, but nothing would come out. And this thing actually approached me. Couldn't see any features, no face, no eyes, it was just all black. And it actually interacted with me, it took my arms, it crossed them across my body, and then it ran off down the hall and into the closet. I mean, it was like, you know, the strangest thing ever, you know, looking back on it. But of course, I was terrified because the thing had just touched me and had done something to me. And I got up then and, you know, ran to my parents' bedroom and told them what happened. They, of course, insisted that I had a bad dream, but, you know, I was awake for the entire thing. So that was my first major experience. And, you know, I had a couple of others growing up. And, you know, it's, you know, as an adult, that's where my writing ended up going.
Wow. Into spooky stuff. Huh? See, everybody has something like that. You know, we grow up in a haunted house or whatever. And so me too. And you have a team that you work with too. So can you tell us some of the adventures that you've had? Because I know Bernadine has had, and I, but she's the investigator, so she's had a lot of good stuff happen to her.
Yeah, well, the team name is Society of the Haunted. It's all part of Haunted Road Week. Yeah, and really, it's right now with my partner, Shauna, and I, and sometimes Vanessa Holgo is a fantastic remote viewer, will remote view for us at times. And we try to do something, you know, significant a few times a month, you know, schedule permitting. We both work. I know I do a ton of things, but I also hold down a day job.
You have to. But, these days.
Yeah. It pays the bills, you know?
Yes.
So, I mean, we investigate a lot. We love to research. We do what we call cemetery crawls. You know, very respectful, and we love going and, you know, visiting the old headstones. And, you know, so there's a lot of things that we do, and all those adventures can be found on the Haunted Road Media channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you've got some videos. I hopped over there and looked at that too. But go on. Bernadine, I know you have some questions for Mike.
Yes. Like Eileen was saying, when we were younger, we had experiences that led us into what we do today. And I wanted to ask you, when you did at eight, nine years old?
About 8 or 9 years old.
Whenever you did encounter that shadow spirit, you said it crossed your arms. Did you feel hands, or was it just energy?
I mean, it just felt like somebody was touching me. I didn't feel like, you know, people have asked that, you know, do you feel a tingling? Do you feel, you know, a shock, buzzing, you know, all of that stuff? It's like, no, it felt like somebody touching me and then just pulling my arms across my body like any other human would, except this person it was completely black, no features.
And no subliminal type, how do you call it, when they talk to your head but not with their mouth?
No messaging.
Yeah, like telepathy. Yeah.
Telepathy,
I didn't get any of that. You know, if they were trying, I didn't catch it. I was just terrified at that time.
Did you have other experiences?
Maybe if I was a little bit older, maybe I would have caught it.
No, because shadow entities are like, you know, that it doesn't matter how old you are. They're just fear, you know. Although it's interesting, because Bernadine brought that back up, that it would cross your arms on you and then run away. So I mean,
yeah,
I know whether you wanted everybody in the house.
The whole thing was
really
bizarre.
It is. Did you see it again, or did you have other activity in the house?
I did not see that particular shadow person again, and that was the only paranormal experience I had in that particular house.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of shadow people experiences, just not there. The next one was when I was about 13 years old. We were moving. That experience happened in a house that I was living at in Massachusetts, and we moved back to Ohio when I was 13. And it was while I was unpacking and, you know, opening boxes, putting things away in my new room and all that. I kept seeing somebody, you know, peering in from my bedroom doorway, and it was shadowy, and I would just turn and look, and it would dart away. And this kept happening every, you know, I'd just be putting stuff away and boom, I'd see it. I ended up asking my mother about this. And she told me that, well, yeah, she had seen it too. So I started calling the thing Tom, like Peeping Tom. So it'd peer around the corner and be like, oh, hi, Tom. And off it would go. And it only lasted for like a couple of months. And it just kind of went away. I pretty much chalked it up to that, you know, maybe something was there, was just checking us out, figured that we were okay, and went about its business.
Mm-hmm. No, I wish they'd have done that in my house, but they just never stopped. I mean, never stopped. But so this puts you on the road to a real interest in this. And so when you work in a historic setting, like, I don't know, Civil War battlefield or something like that, Do you separate that, like separate the story, you know, the factual material story from the ghost story? Do you like weave them in together if there is any? Because, I mean, everything has a story, you know, everything has a story.
Right.
And every place can be haunted. But from your books, I've seen you've been at some haunted locations, so, you know, battlefields, et cetera. So do you like try to keep the two separate in your mind? Or do you like weaving it together?
Well, it's interesting because they work hand in hand. But what I did, like in Ghosts of Maryland and Ghosts and Legends of Oklahoma, and in fact, there's so much Civil War history in Ghosts of Maryland that Louisiana State University included the book in their Civil War review. So that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did was basically, you know, from chapter to chapter, was at the very beginning, I would kind of tease the reader, okay, you know, this is a place, it's got, you know, some haunts, just tease them a little bit. And then I would give them the history of the house, of the location, of the people, and let them know what was going on there. And then at the end, fill them in on the ghost stories and the things that people have seen there. So then they can relate, okay, here's the history to what people are experiencing, and see that there's an actual relationship between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's kind of like what happens down in New Orleans too. When you get a good tour guide or something that tells you the truth, I kind of prefer to tell them the truth and then tell them, well, this is the folklore, and then this is what happened. So and let them decide. But you have several books in Maryland. Have you been to the Poe House in Baltimore?
Yeah, I've been down there. I've been to the Poe Grave. I've done a number of things in downtown Baltimore.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. Go ahead, Bernadine.
You said you do, what is it, cemetery walks or crawls?
The cemetery crawls is what we call them, yeah. I got that off of, Annapolis, Maryland. I used to live there. They have a haunted pub crawl. So you go from, you know, pub to pub to pub, you get the ghost stories and have a drink. And, you know,
oh.
It's
do the stories get better with
it's
every
more,
drink?
It's more of have, oh yeah.
Then
yeah,
you see the ghost.
So it's more of to have fun, but it was like, but I liked the term, you know, it was like, yeah, because you're going from one, you know, from one place to another, so it's kind of a crawl. And so, you know, there would be days that Shauna and I, especially like during the summer, during the warmer months, where we'll just go from cemetery to cemetery to cemetery. And make a day of it.
And people go along with you? So you host it?
No, we don't do that. I mean, we might have a friend or two along, or you know, we might be doing something with maybe with another group or something like that. But you know, we're not hosting an event like that. You know, we have our own Paracon that we do, so we'll host that, and we have the investigation that goes along with that. So, but yeah, we don't make an event of the cemetery crossing. Something like that could get a little too big, and you want to make sure that the cemeteries are respected.
Yeah, and insurance and everything becomes a problem.
Yeah.
How do you view, though, when you're in a cemetery? How do you feel about that? Because, you know, in my experience and what I share with people, it's not the dead that anyone needs to worry about in there, insofar as being scared by, you know. And if you're in there trying to contact dear Uncle Joe, it's better to go when he's freshly buried, or within the at least six months, maybe outward of 8 or 9 months. But beyond that, you know, I feel you're not talking to Uncle Joe. I know what's in there, what feeds on the dead, you know, what feeds on the energy of decomposition. So how do you feel about that? Because as more people go into cemeteries, or as this whole thing peaked with the paranormal, a lot of people have had some bad experiences because they really didn't know what they were doing. So what's your feeling on that?
Yeah, I mean, stuff happens in cemeteries. You know, I know that there's people out there saying, you know, cemeteries, you know, aren't haunted at all. And it's like, well, you know, I don't think they're natively haunted. I don't think people are sitting there hanging out with their bodies, you know, unless they are really narcissistic. But I think what happens is, you know, they might come back to visit. Like if they know another family member has passed and they're being buried, then, you know, they may come back to visit to see all the other, you know, family around the grave of this newly deceased person. I also believe that there are times that, you know, you go into a cemetery and you're trying to visit, and I think there's some sort of connection with the universe where, you know, they kind of get a little tug, like, oh, somebody's trying to visit. Because I've had experiences, Shauna and I have had experiences where, I mean, it's just a cemetery up the road here. We were, you know, just observing this set of graves, and it was really sad. The parents' graves were in the middle. On one side were the two daughters. They lived into full adulthood. And then on the other side were the three boys, and they all passed away as young children. And so we're making this observation there, and, you know, all of a sudden we start hearing some noise off to the side. Oh, what was going on there? And then there was some, you know, some prodding and some pulling by the elbow and stuff like that for each of us. It was like, okay, so we made some contact here. We ended up discovering that this family lived just like right up the road from where the cemetery was. So, you know, we feel like we inadvertently, just by making some observations about the graves, that we had made contact. And Shauna's actually seen one of the little boys at a later date. So I think that can happen. But yeah, if you're intentionally going in there to try to conjure something up, just, you know, anything, I think there are people out there that are, you know, too disrespectful, you know, of the people that are there. And, you know, some nasty things can happen, sure.
Yeah, I've heard some, and it's been on some of the shows that we talk about, like My Ghost Story. You know, unfortunately, they see people who get interested in this, they see on TV, and we talk about this a lot, where they take all their cues from what they see on TV, and they go in there and they provoke, or, you know, it's just like totally trusting that, you know, this is the way to do it, and we're going to come in here, or they show up, you know, en masse and demand to be talked to and everything. It's one end of the spectrum to the other. And, you know, they always, when somebody says, well, it started happening when I was in the cemetery, then the first thing you ask is, well, is it, you know, how old is this cemetery? And if it's notorious, which is what I tell them, you know, it's well known as haunted and other things like .. it's for a reason, you know, and that reason is usually, at the bottom of it, somebody's doing magic or doing rituals, or, you know, even kids are going in there and doing black magic, half-assed black magic, but it's still going to have a problem, you know. So, and that's terrible because, you know, they end up vandalizing, they end up stealing. Yeah, hey, steal from the cemetery.
We've seen it happen.
We've seen it happen down here in New Orleans. It's a whole other world because you get these, you know, you get the raised tombs, and then sometimes the marble on the front is gone, and you can just look in and see a skull looking back at you, and people will take that to do voodoo with and stuff like that. So, you know, yeah, I don't know if you've seen anything like that. Teeth and bones. Yeah, we have a cemetery that is a basically an indigent cemetery. It's not really a potter's field. The family has to bury their dead. If they have a plot in there, they do it themselves. And so what happens is when they dig up the mud, you know, they have to break up the everything that's in there already. So you get jaw bones and teeth. And I've seen people picking through it and taking stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of voodoo that's done in this cemetery, a lot of voodoo. And, you know, I tell anybody that I take there, it's like, don't pick anything up. Don't take anything unless you walk and it's laying in the middle of the road, right? Like you've walked around and there was nothing there, and suddenly you see something, which happened to someone that I know. You can pick that up, you know, but I won't even take mud out of this cemetery on my feet. So, you know, it's just a whole weird thing with it. So I don't think they'll be crawling through that cemetery anytime soon. But go on, Dean. I'm going to pitch it to you.
And what type of evidence have you captured in cemeteries? I know it's kind of hard because most places you have the traffic. You know, I know when we've done investigations, you know, or just going through doing EVP and stuff, it's kind of hard because of the natural sounds, you know, the animals, the people, the traffic, the birds, you know, the wind, things like that, natural things. Have you captured like some class A EVPs or some apparition photos?
I have got some good EVPs at a couple of cemeteries. You're right that it's hard. Because you will get some of that, you know, exterior noise since you are outside. You know, if you're out there on a night in August, all you hear are crickets, you know.
Crickets and frogs.
So it can be a bit of a challenge. But, you know, a great example is Black Bear Cemetery. Now, Black Bear Church, that was featured on my Ghost Story Church of Darkness episode. And the cemetery is right across the road from it. It's a little dirt road. It's out in the middle of nowhere, which is probably why I was able to get some good EVPs out there.
That's the best ones.
I got one in which just making an observation about a grave. Again, it's usually something like that where, you know, you're not trying to, you know, really investigate or what have you. You're not trying to like make direct contact. You're just being respectful. And you're observing what's on the headstones and who the people are, and you're talking about them. And there's one time I'm just making this observation of, oh, this guy has two headstones. There's a family marker here, and then back behind that is a marker from the military. And, you know, class A EVP on my audio recorder came up with a voice that said, correct. So somebody was acknowledging that I had made the correct observation. So,
I think I saw that episode. I think I saw you in that episode.
Yeah, you may have. The other one from that cemetery is on a different night, and we had already, you know, wrapped up our investigation of the area, and I was just taking one last walk through the headstones, and the other two I was with that night were out in the car already, and just walking through the headstones, saying goodbye. I got this really strange EVP that said, my teeth are warm. Or at least that's what it sounded like to me. So it was pretty crazy.
That is the episode. His teeth are the teeth are warm. And I was like, what the hell?
I don't know.
You know, it's like his teeth are warm. I don't know
Some people have said that they hear, I can't get warm, but I don't hear that that C sound at the beginning. I just hear my teeth are warm. Yeah, I hear the M, and so really strange.
It would make more sense, I guess, if, you know, I can't get warm. That would kind of make more sense, but you never know.
It would make sense, but I just don't hear that sound.
Yeah, right. So you got to go with what you hear. So, and yeah. You know, what I know. Go on, Bernadine.
Oh, and that Friday night Ghost Frights, what is that?
Hmm. Yeah, that's, well, we just released one tonight. You know, every Friday night, release a new video on the Hunter Road Media channel, and usually it's a Friday night Ghost Frights on Friday. Every once in a while, I'll release something different if I haven't been able to put a full one together, but it's a ghost story episode for the channel. And so tonight we were talking about the ghosts on Oak Island. And, yeah, that's the big, you know, money pit island, and, you know, trying to find the treasure and all that. And there have been a number of ghost sightings reported there throughout its history, including a couple of the guys that are on the current excavation. And, you know, one of them, Marty, who heads up, like, the whole thing, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, I've seen that show.
He doesn't believe in curses. He doesn't believe in the paranormal or anything. He's like, I don't believe in the paranormal, but there was this one time, and he launches into this ghost story.
There's always that one time. Have they ever found, they found anything? I like, it's like, somebody said it's like, you know, two or three seasons of they're digging the same hole. Like, would they ever get to something? I kind of lost interest in it myself, but.
They found some interesting artifacts there. I mean, they haven't found, you know, the big treasure that they're looking for, but.
That's why I kept watching it.
Yeah.
They're going to find it. They're going to find it. They never find it.
They haven't found the big one, but they found this interesting cross that appears to be a Templar cross. And they haven't verified that, but it does not come from North America. The age of it predates any, you know, any of what we perceive as like known exploration into North America from Europe. They just found a crossbow bolt there, which again kind of predates discovery of North America from the Europeans. So, some interesting things have been finding there.
Go on, Dean. Dean, I'm sending you a message on your phone, by the way. I'm going to have to step away for a minute. I'm sorry. I've been distracted. So I'll be right back. I have to take care of something. I'm sorry. Live radio, but what can I do? Okay. I'll be right back.
Life happens.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to ask you a question about filming, because I was filmed for, it was a radio station local here, and I was being filmed for the news channel on an investigation at a radio show, and a radio station, I'm sorry. And while they were filming me doing the interview, they had these big lights that I'm sure you've seen because you've been filmed quite a lot. And they're behind you. You know how they put these different lights behind you for, you know, their viewing or, you know, the viewers viewing. Well, while they're interviewing me, one of the lights go out and the news lady freaks out because she said they have to charge them lights. They're big LED lights, like huge. And they have to charge these things like for a day or so. And not even 5 minutes into the interview, it goes out and it stays out. And I know, you know, being an investigator, you know that spirits can use energy from things like that and just zap them, just like they can our batteries. But has anything ever happened like that to, like, the film crew while you were filming on your shows, the series? The episodes that you did before, any like technical difficulties like that?
I'm trying to remember if we had any real technical difficulties with those couple of episodes. I mean, we had so much going on, especially with the one from the haunted. We had so much going on in the house, and the couple of guys that were there, they weren't running around with just a couple of handheld cameras. There was a whole separate interview section that we did. We just did that out of a hotel room. As far as my ghost story, you know, we went into the studio in LA and recorded it there. And then we had the guy coming up to do the B-roll and the recreations and all that. I don't really recall anything happening there that was out of the ordinary, but when we did The Haunted, they came out to film the cleansing of the house that we did, and that was just an absolutely crazy night that nothing really happened with their camera equipment, but we just had so many other things going on around the house that it was just off the charts. But of course, yeah. You know, we were trying to cleanse the house and push the entity out of there, so it wasn't going willingly.
Right. And do y'all do any like staging rituals or things to try to get the spirit? I know when we do investigations on my team, we actually try to get the spirits to cross over, no matter who they are. Even though the clients may say, oh, it's probably my grandmother and she makes me feel safe. It's okay if she stays. And I always tell them, you know, time on the other side, they don't have time on the other side. So if you're gone 200 years from now and the spirit's still earthbound, that spirit may still be here. So why not try to get the spirit to cross over? You know, go to where it needs to be, not to stay here, because some spirits don't even know they're dead. How do you feel about that?
We'll do a cleansing when the client asks for it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that we do often. You know, it's as a per request. It's just, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on it because in one sense, it's, you know, who am I to say that this person needs to go? There may be a purpose that they're still here for that we just don't understand. And, you know, if it's a malevolent spirit or something like that, sure. We'll take care of that. But, you know, if it's somebody that's, you know, pretty passive and they're just kind of hanging around and.
What sure, about children's spirits?
We kind of the same thing, just because, you know, we don't really know. We don't understand. I mean, we think we do, but we don't completely understand what's going on the other side. So until we have that information, now, if we somehow get the information, you know, because you, after investigating a place a number of times, you start to get a feel of what's going on. And if it, you know, if there's a child there that's being repressed, then okay, we might go ahead and take care of that. But, you know, if the child is there with its mother and they're waiting for something and they're needing to do something, you know, I'm not going to send the child on its way and take it away from its mother or something like that. So, you know, it just, it's situational.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, you have to go on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
Have you ever come across any demonic hauntings?
Not demonic, malevolent, so, you know, something that was a nasty human spirit, for sure. That was the, you know, one of those was the case featured on The Haunted, so you know, sometimes you run into that, but not demonic.
Yeah, I mean, I know you probably get a lot of emails like I do, and clients don't, you know, they don't understand. Some clients don't understand, and they go by what they see on TV, and they think everything's a demon. And I'm like,
well, yeah,
no.
Because everything on TV is a demon these days. That's what sells. That's what everybody wants to see on TV. So it's like, yeah, you know, a candle holder falls over on the mantle. I'm like, oh my God, we got a demon.
Oh yeah. I get these emails like constantly, and I'm like, what makes you, and that's my first question. What makes you feel this is a demonic, if you have anything in your house? Because I can't say unless I do the investigation, but if you do have something in your house, what makes you feel like it's a demon? Oh, because my daughter got scratched a year ago, you know, so I can't go by that either. I mean, we have different, you know, there are different, I can't even form words today. You see, it's been a while since I've been on here. I was out for a while. levels, I guess, of a presence that you would feel is either malevolent versus demonic. You know, they have their different symptoms, I guess you would say, that we know that other people don't know. Like what to look for. We know about the smells and you know, a person knowing things that they shouldn't know at a certain age about you, you know, things that only a demonic presence would know. And a lot of times they don't have them answers. They're like, I don't know, I just feel it's a demon. Okay. Because we don't just go out for like any knocks and bangs in homes because we just don't have that kind of time. You know, when you have one right, team, exactly. You can only stretch it so far. And if your team worked during the week, and a lot of people don't understand that, they want you to go today. You know, because yeah, they're afraid.
They don't understand that you actually have a job. Yeah. Because they see what's on TV and they think that, well, paranormal investigator must be a job. These people are just, you know, running around the country doing these investigations. And
right. Well,
we need to get paid. We need to have a job to pay the bills. So,
yeah. That's what they don't understand. And then you have to also, you know, protect the safety of you and your team. So what we do is do an interview with the client if we feel they need that. Because sometimes you could just talk to them over the phone and it just makes them feel better, you know. And it's because spirits are everywhere. You know, just some people can see them, feel them, hear them. Some can't. But sometimes we can take care of it that way. But if we actually have to go out, we feel we need to go out, or they make it clear that we really need to go out to make them feel better. We do, because some people do need help. Well, we do an interview first before we even start to think about, you know, an investigation. And we go and we do EMF sweeps and things and talk to the clients. And we have this procedure, you know, protocol, everything. They have to sign paperwork, you know, to keep us in the clear. But we don't do investigations for everybody, because if you would do that, we would be on the road at least 4 times a week.
Yeah,
and we only do investigations on Saturdays because, you know, people work during the week. But that's why we can't do it 5 times a week. Now, people they see on TV, that's what they don't understand. They get upset with us, you know, because it takes us some time. And also when we do the investigation, it takes time. After we leave is when the work really starts, because that's when we have to do the analyzing to find the evidence for them.
Yeah, you may not even find anything that first time.
You may not.
You may have to go back several times.
Right. Because spirits, to me, if I was, you know, a spirit and strange people would come in and start asking me questions, I probably wouldn't say anything. Because
exactly. Yeah, you have to build a rapport.
Right. So, and I try to explain to them that too. You may have something, but they may not respond to us. Because a lot of times when we leave, they have activity. When we get there, they don't.
Right.
So,
yeah. They see what's on TV and they're like, oh, well, you know, these guys, you know, got a response, you know, from them in about 2 minutes, and they went to this other room and they got this activity in about 5 minutes. And it's not the way it works.
Yeah. And do you get like a crap load of people sending you orb pics?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We get plenty of
that.
Yeah,
we get that. And you know, what I explain to them, I don't know, you know, how your team works, but I don't go by every orb we see. Like I try to explain to the client, I do believe they have spirits that travel in you know, balls of light. But sure, I go by their intelligence on video. You know, if you see them hovering over somebody's head and then move around the room and come back and hover over that person's head, you know that's not dust. That's something else. You know,
right.
it's something intelligent. If you see it go by a doorknob and the door opens, that's not dust. But dust does mimic an orb in photographs, you know, and the closer
right,
it gets
exactly.
to the lens and you have a flash, you know, you're going to have a big fat orb. So,
Oh, and that's why I don't use a flash anymore.
Yeah.
At all.
Or if you have a flashlight.
Well, another thing is, you know, with that is, you know, I'm seeing this, you know, if I see like a shadow or maybe it's an orb or whatever it is, it's, you know, doing something off on the other side of the room. I'm seeing that with my eyes in the current lighting conditions.
Mm-hmm.
If I use a flash, I'm changing the lighting conditions. I'm now dousing the entire room in this very bright light. So when I do that, yeah, I might get a reflection of that, off of dust, or maybe it's a reflective surface. And if it's a shadow that I saw over there, I'm going to completely obliterate it with the light. So right. I've stopped using flash. And
well, people
I just,
that
you
send
know,
us these flash photos.
Right around, oh, there's something over there.
Yeah, people that send us these photos most of the time use a flash.
Right.
So, yeah, but it's crazy.
I'm back.
What we do is crazy. You have to be kind of crazy to do what we do, but we do it to help people. That's how I feel.
Absolutely.
You know.
Well, I'm back. Mischief.
Hey,
Aline. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Mischief managed, though. I've been listening to what you're saying about orbs. And do you, what I was going to say is that they dismiss orbs too readily. And I think you agree, listening to what you're telling Bernadine, I think you agree with that. If you remember, like in the beginning, it was nothing but orbs. You know, I have a T-shirt that says nothing but orbs, but every orb. But, you know, they don't know any, if they just dismiss every one of them and say, well, it's all, not, you know, they don't know anything, obviously, about, at least about from my perspective, occult tradition and the types of entities that live on our plane and exist on different planes, because there are a lot of things that an orb could be. They could be, you know, the feeder entities, the little larvae that are attracted to decomposition, any decomposition, material decomposition, trash, you know, hoarding in those situations. And then there are definitely intelligent orbs, that appear as balls of light. And that goes all the way back through, you know, psychical research and paranormal research. It's verified. So dismissing orbs, you know, out of hand. But do you feel, I was listening to you talking about the flash, how do you feel about digital cameras? Because I still think the best is 35 millimeter or, you know, slide or negative film, a negative print film that you can, you know, compare to the actual picture. I've always thought that was the best. I've found that a lot of fake, false apparitions, et cetera, are digital blurring, and people, you know, thoroughly believe that they have captured somebody who wasn't there. So how do you feel about that? Do you have a preference for digital film?
Yeah, I mean, you can get blurring with both digital and the 35 millimeter. The older digital cameras, where you got a lot of that pixelation, you know, and it came out real grainy, that stuff was really hard to use. And but you get like a really good DSLR camera these days, and those images are pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I mean, those cameras are pricey, but I'm fine with using those. When it comes to like old school methods, you know, like using a reel-to-reel tape as opposed to a digital audio recorder.
Mm-hmm.
The technology behind it, where you're recording to magnetic tape,
mm-hmm.
is more reliable than using a digital audio recorder. However, it's a heck of a lot more difficult.
Yeah, it is.
Off of a reel-to-reel tape onto your computer to do whatever it is that, you know, you want to do to it, whether it's to include in a video or share evidence or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the digital audio recorder is just a lot more convenient in that regards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd still prefer, like, you know, the 35 millimeter, but I took it one time. Now it's an old camera. I got it when I was 14 and, you know, I'm old now. So it was like in 74, but it's 73, 74. Hey, what's that?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Hey, it's just like talking to us at home.
Sorry.
I've taken it to concerts and, you know, loaded it and unloaded it in various states of mind, et cetera. So I know what I'm doing. And it's a manual camera. It's a Minolta SLR, 35 millimeter. And so it's the type that when you put the film in, you kind of have to roll it back a little bit to get the tug. And whenever you take a picture and advance the film, you see the wheel, you know, the wheel on the left-hand side. I forget what it's called, but the little handle that you would use to rewind, the rewind spool. It goes too. And I spent a day at the Myrtles Plantation taking pictures, primarily outside. And there were, we had to wait for a tour to go in to, or to finish before we went in. So I took a lot of exterior pictures. I've taken, you know, I took pictures through windows because I knew I wouldn't be able to take pictures inside. And I watched the spool just winding out. I watched it advance. And when I got it developed, it was nothing. The whole roll had like basically not been exposed. I just got nothing but black negatives and all. So that's one of the few times. And I know it wasn't user error. Cause I can, like I said, I can feel what I'm doing in the dark with this camera. And, you know, so it was weird. That's one time where it failed me, but I really get, you know, I kind of get testy when these people put examples of ghosts and it's really just digital, like somebody moved their arm. And so they say, oh, it's another arm. It's a ghost arm. Or, you know, I have a problem with that. I guess I'm just old school, you know, with that. But it's better if I can look at a negative and say, well, you know, here it is. And it appeared on, you know, negative film. That's a little better for me. That's just a preference anyway. So go on.
And if you like the old film too, where you double exposure and what have you. So there are ways to do it back then. It's just if that technique has probably been a bit lost because, you know, almost everybody's using digital these days. But
well, thank God.
Yeah, there's so much you can do with
they're bringing it back.
Well, you even have with the Polaroid. Now, for a while, they did away with the Polaroid Instamatic cameras, and now they're bringing them back as kind of like a novelty item.
Mm-hmm.
So people are able to use that again these days. But
I actually have one.
Yeah, there's do you?
Okay. Yeah, believe it or not.
Yeah, there's a lot that people do with photo manipulation. I mean, Photoshop has made it really difficult.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. And that brings us like to YouTube and stuff like that. Like, I spent some time looking around and there was some guy's channel. And of course, you know, I'm going to explore your channel more. But, you know, you get these guys or somebody that says, this is the definitive proof, these five examples, no way to explain it, right? And, you know, I mean, I'm going to say you had five examples in one. Was very valid. It was the Gettysburg, the sort of now famous Gettysburg capture of the troops moving up and down, like walking in the distance. It's been on My Ghost Story. It's, you know, been on whatever, where, you know, the family's out after just at twilight, I think, before they went in from Gettysburg and they actually see ghosts walking up the hill, actually horses and everything. So that's one, but then they've got, you know, the doll is moving in the background. And you've got this kid who's like in the right-hand corner of the screen so that like, you know, 75% of the shot is on his room and the doll, right? And the guy's like, no, I can't explain this, can you? And I'm like, yeah, I can explain it. It's strings, it's other people out of point of view, you know, and all. It's just so, and all that does is muddy up the field. It makes people say, yeah, everything's a fake, you know, it's a fake, all a fake. And I really hate that, you know? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it makes it real difficult. And we're always, unfortunately, going to have that. You know, people are putting these different videos out there because they want to get views. You know, that's kind of a big thing. They want to, you know, get their 15 minutes of fame for putting out a photo or a video or whatever it is, and, you know, get a million views on it. But it does make it so much more difficult for us who are, you know, legit and trying to do real work to have people believe us. So, you know, I mean, you're going to have your people that are always going to be, you know, against our field. Let's say I'm not going to believe anything, and they would just stay on the side. And you have people on our end where, like, you know, okay, I believe in it. The problem comes with the people that are in the middle, that are on the fence, and when you have the videos out there that are, you know, obviously fake, you know, they start shying away from believing. And,
right.
You know, that becomes an issue.
Every time that I, you know, I come across a channel like that, I leave a comment that basically says that. I sort of critique it and I say 1, 2, 3, fake, 4. 4 is the Gettysburg one, that's true, and then 5, you know, because it's just total fake. And I always say, this is just me, a good rule of thumb, if it comes from Latin America or Asia or the Near East, it's fake, okay? It's just totally the flying man, you know, the hands of the doll turning its head while, you know, somebody's under the skirt of the doll. It's just totally fake. It makes it, you know, a lot more difficult. So, Dean, you got anything on that?
Yeah, it makes it hard on us because a lot of people, they look at our evidence and they think it's fake. You know, when they see a lot of fake stuff on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And
or they think we're all Zachary.
We're all, yeah.
Come on out and face me. You're a chicken. Oh, wait, I can't, you know.
Well actually, I don't know if you, you know, bring your evidence to wherever you said you speak at conventions, but I actually, me and Eileen were doing a presentation before and someone stole a photograph of mine.
A hard copy.
The hard copy. Yeah. That was a lesson for me not to do again, because that's the only copy I had. It was a ghost dog.
Mm-hmm.
And someone stole it. So with that happening, you know, even if I had a copy, I wouldn't be able to use it, because if they added something to the photo and tried to use it as their own, it would be a fake.
Well, yeah, or they want to pass it off as their own, you know, and say that they took it. But I have been looking at your bio, and I see Paranormal Roads, in addition, like right after Ghosts and Legends, Paranormal Roads, and then the Friday Night Ghost Rides. What is that? Is that about roads, like roads, real roads?
It's a paranormal road trip video. So hitting the road, going, you know, making a road trip to a haunted location and do an investigation.
You know, I love haunted road stories. I don't know. I mean, there's a good book out there by a woman. I think her name's Annie Wilson, and it's called Trucker Ghost Stories. And I've read that thing like twice back and forth because it's so... it's so intriguing, you know what I mean? Like truckers, you know, and we were talking about them at the beginning of the show. They seem to all be in West Virginia when I'm trying to get back from New York. But anyway, you know, they're very pragmatic, you know, down, salt of the earth type, you know, in there. But some of the stories in there are creepy, really creepy. Like they, you know, they drive off on a road or they have to take an exit or detour and they just go back in time. Do you have any of those? Have you experienced anything weird out there on your road trips?
I haven't had the whole like time warp thing. I've heard a lot of reports about that. I mean, we do have a video on the channel, the top 5 or 6 haunted roads in the world. You know, I in a couple of the books I did cover some roads that were haunted. But I have not actually experienced something out there on the road myself.
I don't think I'd want to from some of these, you know, these stories that I've heard. And I found that a lot of people default to aliens a lot of times, you know, so it's the aliens, it's the men in black and all that. But, you know, as a historian and somebody who, you know, studied folklore, there are a lot of stories out there of, you know, it's almost like a lot of them are like that Twilight Zone episode where the guy he's in the wagon train and his son is sick and he goes over a hill and he's in, you know, he comes into present day and gets aspirin and goes back over the hill. There, you know, there are really stories like that out there, and there are real experiences, because I mean, out in the middle of nowhere, you know, like my daughter was driving from San Diego. She was in the Navy, San Diego, while she's driving back too. And she actually had a tumbleweed go across. And she was like, something's coming across, you know, out of whatever. And she's on the phone with me and she's like, Mom, a tumbleweed just went across. I was like, what's coming? Oh my God, where are you? She's out in the Badlands, right? I'm like, oh my God. And I'm trying to think of all the what's out there. it's a tumbleweed. I was like, damn, I wish I would have been there for that. I've never seen a tumbleweed go across the highway, you know, but
some of the stuff.
Well, I haven't, but you know, it's like when we were coming back, I was with her. I was like, I was hoping, and I had to settle for what's called a walking cactus, which the roots move. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had to settle for that. I was like, oh, I felt deprived of no tumbleweed. But there are some weird things out there. I mean, seriously, they are, you know, just some of the stuff, like, I don't know. I love road trips, but the middle of the night in the middle of nowhere is not somewhere I like to be, you know? So,
It's funny. I've driven so much. I've probably, with all the cars that I've had, I've probably driven close to 1,000,000 miles. I'm always doing these road trips and driving to all these conventions and everything. And it's, the road is one place where I haven't actually seen anything yet.
Well, but I would count. I would be happy about that. I was scared, you know. Oh, I don't mean scared. I do get scared. I know what it is, but it's like I still get that kind of campfire tale scared, you know, like, you know, ooh, it's spooky. Bigfoot and stuff like that. I don't need to see all that. Yeah. I don't need to see, like, you know, on Route 66 or 666 or whatever it is now, you know. This big cloud, you know, it looks like an aircraft or something. But you know, so you have to have had some weird things happen to you. Is there anything you want to share that's kind of like creeped you out?
Something that creeped me out. It's always a interesting question for me because I don't necessarily get scared when I go on investigations. So people are like, what's the scariest place? I'm like, I don't. Although we just did a video, one of our Inside the Upside Down episodes, which is a talk show, but you know, video, on our scariest encounters that we've had. And like I said, I don't really get scared, but there are, you know, some things that are kind of unusual, kind of creep me out. Now, going back to, you know, Black Bear Church, which was on my ghost story, that was the episode with the crawler. I mean, we got those great EVPs at the cemetery, but within the church is where we experienced the crawler in the basement, and
ooh,
that was definitely
that.
Creepy.
Tell us about that.
Yeah.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah. So this was the actual church that's there. It's abandoned. It's, you know, it has no roof anymore. It's just basically cinder block and stone and what have you. There's a lot of local rumors and legends there about somebody having conjured something up, and it, you know, it was this crawler. And there's also some stories about like short shadow people that come up to the windows and the crawler has dominion over them and all this stuff. I've never seen the short shadow people there, but I have seen the crawler. And so we were in the basement there, you know, doing an investigation, and it just slipped in through one of the windows and was just very quickly circling us, like around the walls and the ceiling. It hit the floor at some point because it kicked this bottle across the floor. Mm-hmm. We were getting a lot of weird things going on at that time, too. And like I said, it's out in the middle of nowhere. Listening back to the audio, I was getting all this static from somewhere, which is pretty crazy. It was also apparently hitting the, there's a metal railing that goes along the stairs down into the basement area. And it apparently was hitting that because, you know, we hear banging on the metal. And, you know, when you caught a glimpse of it, you just kind of like, you know, quickly caught the like long arms and legs just kind of crawling across the, you know, the walls and the ceiling and all that. The medium that was with us at the time suggested, you know, we should sing some hymns. So we did that, and it eventually went away.
Mm-hmm.
But that was pretty creepy.
And where is that? Where is this church again?
Down in the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. The whole thing is the middle of nowhere.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, that would be an experience to have. But it could be the result of conjuring. It could be the result of, you know, people coming in there and doing black magic.
It could be. There's just not a way to confirm it. Now, we did find back in a little room back there there's this, it's set into the wall, but basically it's this pillar that you have all these stones, I think it was brick underneath it, and then it had this concrete slab that was on top. Mm-hmm. And we did find some evidence of charring up there, some burnt animal bones. Somebody had, like, set a fire on there. It's hard to say for sure that they were sacrificing animals back there because we weren't there when it happened, you know?
Right.
So mm-hmm. it's like, okay, there's some evidence of somebody doing something back there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could be a piece of evidence to lead toward to saying, okay, somebody conjured something there, but mm-hmm. since we weren't present for it, we're just not going to know for sure.
Somebody could have taken shelter there and actually, you know, cooked something. Like a rabbit or something like, you know, I mean, it's, you're right. Unless you know for sure, you can't put a real stamp on it. Like, yeah, this is valid. Although I will say that if there is conjuring down there and they're using cement or they're doing it in the ground of the basement, then they're doing it correctly. So that would be a place to be wary. And if blood is spilled, then it's ruined practically forever. Because blood draws things that will stay a long time. Dean.
Hey.
Turn it over to you. This has been a weird night. I hope you enjoy it. I mean, we're like, Mike, we're like, you know, sit down, have a beer, you know. we're just really, you know, we're not set to any sort of a formality here. So you'll hear dogs in the background, cats, who knows, you know. So I hope you don't mind that. But Dina, do you have some questions or you want to say something to Mike?
Yeah, I have a question. At the beginning of the show, you had spoke about someone working with you with remote viewing.
Yeah.
How does that help in your paranormal investigating?
It helps us to, for one, give us a little bit of background about the house that we may not know, like maybe a certain area to concentrate on, maybe a little bit more clarity of, you know, what exactly it is what we're dealing with, or even just to confirm something that we've already picked up on, and, you know, just to get her impressions. And a lot of times it just, you know, it confirms what we've already, you know, come to know. Like, a great example is we were at the Bel Air house one night in Bel Air, Ohio, and just to kind of, you know, get her impressions, she had no idea where we were at. I put her on the spot, you know, called her up, hey, you know, tell me about what's going on here. And she described the house perfectly to a T, you know, walk in the front door, up the stairs, you know, take a right down the hall. And, you know, the most active room in the house is at the end of the hall, which it is. And that was routinely a room that we would have a lot of problems in. So it was helpful. But, you know, with that, knowing that, okay, she's reading this house correctly. Okay, what else can you tell us about it? What other areas should we be looking at? What might be a problem for us tonight? You know, that sort of thing.
And for our listeners, can you explain what a remote viewer does?
So a remote viewer, and I'm not a psychic, so I'm not exactly sure how it works, but basically they are able to connect with their energy at long distances to a location and be able to actually see, kind of quote unquote, see, what's going on there at that place. So, I mean, it's for them. From my understanding, it's more of like they're able to feel it out, and through what they're feeling with the energy, they're able to get an image in their mind, and it's, you know, she'll draw stuff out. She's a great artist, and she'll actually draw things out that she's seen.
So she's actually in a different state or something?
Yeah, she goes into a different
location.
State.
Okay.
That would be real remote viewing. I mean, like, you call her totally cold. She doesn't know anything about where you are or where you're going, then, you know, that's really good remote viewing. That's a good psychic to have.
Oh, yeah, she's fantastic.
So, was that the Bel Air house you were talking about? Because I'm on your, on your YouTube page.
That was just an example.
Mm. And the video is on your YouTube page, so. Now.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, I have Bel Air house.
It's right there. It says Raw. Bel Air House Raw. What about urban exploration? Because I see you have a video about that. I have found, yeah. There's a guy named Dan Bell. And you probably, maybe you've seen him. If not, go check him out. And he doesn't believe in anything supernatural. He is not looking for supernatural or paranormal experiences. He is a true urban explorer. He has a series called the Dead Mall series, where the malls are dead or dying. And just, he's all over the place. But every now and then, something will happen with him. And he did the Eileen Warnos hotel room, where she stayed in Florida, where she was staying before she was arrested. And he had something really weird happen in the hotel room. Then he was in, he just happened to pull off the road, and there was this thing. It looked like it could have been a, like, I don't know, like some sort of a processing plant for something, not grain, but maybe some industrial substance. And he just happened to pull off the road as an urban explorer, you know. He sticks his cell phone. He actually shoots him with his cell phone. And he has the greatest capture of a ghost. It's not a, like a full-blown shadow entity, but it is a person moving. And it has nothing to do with, like, the guy outside is outside, but he wasn't behind him. And even if he had been, the size of the opening that Dan was leaning in, he's a very big guy. Yeah, he's chubby. And he blocks out all the light. There was no way that it could have been a shadow from outside. It's the best ghost capture I've ever seen. I mean, he totally stuck. He just stopped to look. And I guess the thing's curiosity was, and it literally, it walks past him. And then it walks down sort of like on his left. And then it walks across a wall and turns a corner. And he's like, what the hell is that? So those are great captures. And like, have you had any experiences like that while you're out looking at abandoned stuff and risking your life, you know, in a lot of cases for some of these places? Because it's like when you're not looking for it, it is the best thing. And he's got some really good stuff. He don't believe that it's supernatural, but he can't explain it, you know. So, and we know. So you have anything like that that's ever happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these abandoned places are haunted for whatever reason. You know, something is drawn to there. We have some urban exploration videos that are out there. You know, some of them, I'm trying to think what we have.
Gore,
there.
So we have Gore area.
Yeah, Gore Orphanage. You know, that place is sad. Now, I've heard, you know, somebody walking in the woods, you know, right over there, and there's, you know, nobody there. There's this, and you're right, it happens sometimes you're not even thinking of it. We've gone up the hill to old abandoned road. Half of it's falling down a cliff. So you have to be very careful. So we had already gone all the way up there, checked everything out at the top, came back down, and it was when we were coming back down that all of a sudden, you know, Shauna got, I don't want to say spooked, but she had something essentially, you know, grab her as we were, you know, walking back down the hill. So it's, yeah, kind of unexpected as you're just kind of exploring and checking things out, you know, may or may not be haunted. With the Gore Orphanage, which is really the Swift Mansion, people always misname that thing all the time. There's a lot of legends that are very untrue that go along with it. And so, you know, people try to say it's one of the most haunted locations in Ohio, and it's really not. It has something going on there, but it's not as haunted as people try to make it out to be. And so, you know, we're going out there, we're kind of checking things out, you know, maybe try to connect with the family a little bit that had been there, which is, again, you know, very different from what the legends say. And, you know, a lot of times you just kind of get a feeling of sadness there because it was, four grandchildren of the people that lived in the house that died of diphtheria all within a span of 7 days.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, the grandmother and the family and all that tried to, they were spiritualists. This was in the late 1800s. And they were, you know, conducting seances to try to contact the deceased children in there. So, you know, very different from all the, you know, legends you hear about the fire and all this crazy stuff. So you get the feeling of sadness that's there, and every once in a while you may get something that might be paranormal. It's interesting when it happens, of course.
Yeah, because Dan, that he, the Eileen Warnos thing, he wasn't even like doing anything paranormal. He was doing like a mini documentary on her. So all about mm-hmm. the crimes where she was, you know, the places where she was alleged to have been. And then he was able to stay in the room that she, you know, stayed in for these, the last few, whatever weeks when, you know, whatever was going on. And he came on and he said, you know, I've been hearing some weird stuff in the room. And he said, so what I'm going to do is when I wake up, I'm going to grab my camera and I'm going to let you hear it. And he actually pulled it out. It's the whole thing is very interesting. I mean, if you're interested in that kind of thing, but he's laying in bed. And so like, the bed faces the door, the entrance door. So you got to go behind him. To the right is the bathroom. And there's somebody in there bonking around, toothbrush, water running and everything. And it's not real. He's like freaking out. I mean, okay, this is Eileen Warnos. I'd have been I wouldn't have been in the room, but if I had to be in the room, I'd have been out like sort of at the door now going, who is it? He got up. He took the light of his camera and he looked, and it was just not, but you can hear it, you know. And I love those because they're just so impromptu. They're spontaneous, and there's no explanation either then or now. Of course, there's other ones where he goes into like drug houses. I don't know how y'all do that, into these abandoned places. He almost got found by a drug dealer in a house in Baltimore. He's out there by himself. Oh, wow. And he was walking around trying not to, I mean, he's big, right? He's chubby and he's trying to creep and make no noise. And you can hear these guys talking, and it's in one of the worst neighborhoods of Baltimore. And he comes around a corner and there's like a cooler, like a little igloo. There's like some chocolate milk and a treat. And there's this big bag of packs of cocaine. Okay. And I'm like,
oh, wow.
Oh my God. You know, it really is nerve wracking because you know, this guy, he's by himself. He's goofy. He's can't creep around anywhere because he's going to make some noise. And there's these two guys in there and you can hear him talking back and forth. I mean, I sweated it, you know? So, I mean, I got to give you a medal. I got to give people who do that kind of thing, that do it right and don't, you know, aren't disrespectful and everything. You got my, you know, my admiration, because I'll look at the outside, but I'd be afraid something would fall on me or collapse or whatever. Yeah. So, but
have to be very careful. I mean, it's physical danger more than anything supernatural in those places.
And true, in my book that Risks Incidental, I wrote about that, and Dean and I talk about that a lot. It's the practical dangers too that people don't think about. They think, oh well, you know, I'm going to get possessed or whatever's going to happen, but you know, you could fall through a floor. Could, you know, it's like this whole thing of, there's a couple of news clips that I put in there. One of a woman who was drunk and they were investigating an allegedly haunted place on a campus, and her boyfriend jumped from one roof to the other and she went after him. He could do it. I guess he had longer legs, but she didn't make it and she fell and died. And there's another woman who died because they were investigating some building, and they were in an area where there were a lot of bats, and they had guano and everything, and they had, you know, they disturbed the air and they basically breathed it in, and she was dead. Like a couple of weeks later, whatever, you know, she inhaled, she got sick and died. So those are the kind of things that people don't think about, you know, they get wrapped up in, you know, in looking for ghosts. And you know, if you haven't told at least one or two people where you're going and you go by yourself, who knows, you know, you could become a ghost and stay
you
there.
Could, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dean, go ahead.
Yeah. We talk about dangers of the paranormal and supernatural. When we speak at conventions, do you speak about that whenever you speak about the dangers?
All of the dangers, you know.
All of the dangers, yeah.
You know, spiritual as well as, you know, physical.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about a lot of different things. You know, primarily for the past year and a half, I've been doing my shadow person presentation. I've done one on the relationship between history and the paranormal. There's another presentation that I have that I do sometimes. It's kind of a nuts and bolts about research and, you know, some practicals of, you know, how to be able to find things, look things up, go to, you know, different resources and offices and things like that. So I'm somewhere along the road, sure, I'll talk about dangers.
Well, then we're talking about dangers, I guess. So, because we're telling them, you never know. Like, you know, you go into a cemetery in New Orleans and, you know, you say, oh, we're going to take pictures and try and get EVPs. And some voodoo mama did a ritual, you know, like the night before, and you happen to be lunch or something. You know, you come in there at the wrong time. You know, I'm sensitive to that, because a lot of the problems that I experienced when I was growing up were the result of just basically ignorant and misguided, you know, experimentation with the occult and, you know, other sort of, you know, supernatural investigation or indulgences or new age crap. That was another one. So I know the trouble that it can cause. And I would like to, if I can help somebody, you know, avoid dragging something home from a cemetery. So it's always a good day, you know. So
yeah, and we teach, you know, especially teenagers these days that watch a lot of the shows that we are filmed for, you know, and other shows, they're so into the paranormal these days. They, you know, grab Ouija boards and just do seances and call things in that they shouldn't, and do rituals and sacrifices and things, you know. I don't know. Some are bored. Some just want to experiment. But it does cause a lot of problems, not just for them, but their whole family.
That's right. And then they call somebody like y'all.
Right.
Right.
Well, Mike, we're about up with time right now. So what's ahead for you? What's anything coming up around the band? And how would anyone who wanted to get in touch with you do that?
Yeah, well, you can find me at MikeRexecker.com or HauntedRoadMedia.com. Also, check out our YouTube channel, which is Haunted Road Media. We have, for Haunted Road Media, we have a couple more books coming out. We just came out with one from Marlon Brooks. It was actually a fiction novel, Soul Connection, about reincarnation. And then we have it's a paranormal Christmas children's book that Lee Ehrlich and his daughter Alyssa are putting together. And then Michelle Hamilton has one on Civil War ghost stories that'll be coming out. So there's a lot going on with Haunted Road Media right now, both on the publishing side and then on the videos. Of course, we just had our Friday Night Ghost Stories come out tonight. And then we'll have several more. We have investigation videos coming out. And of course, on Tuesday nights, we have two live stream shows. Edge of the Rabbit Hole and Inside the Upside Down that we stream. So there's always a lot going on there.
Great. And I guess people can contact you there either through your website, or is it Rick Secker.com? Sorry.
MikeRickSecker.com.
Thank you.
Or HauntedRoadMedia.com. Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. You've been very patient. And
thank you,
man. We hope you'll visit us again, and we wish you luck, and you know, please stay safe.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Definitely. Thank you. And I'm going to look into all your videos. I have your page up, YouTube channel up right now. Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much. And
we'll talk
to you again soon, hopefully. Bye-bye.
All right. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, he was great, but yeah. I always worry. You know, it's like, why watch cliffhanger TV when you can watch these people on YouTube do crazy stuff? You know, it's always like somebody's going to get shot and killed or, you know, whatever. So I'm going to go check out his channel. He's got several sort of like real ghost investigating. Let's see, why historic exploration matters to them. That's, I mean, some good stuff on there. So, so anyway, that wraps it up. Until next week.
Yeah.
That wraps it up. All right. Well, you folks, you've been listening to the Supernatural Substation. Bernadine, anybody wants to get in touch with you, my friend, how do they do it?
They can find me on Facebook, the Bernadine LeBlanc, or my website, www.lspr-society.com. You can email me, Bernadine@lspr-society.com.
Right. And the Supernatural, I am on Facebook. You can find me there. And I have a few pages. You can buy my books at www.alinepistanio.net. If you buy from my website, I'll send you signed copies. But I am on Facebook, as is Supernatural Substation. Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, Pinterest, we are everywhere. And the archives for our shows are everywhere as well. You'll be looking on YouTube, the station, UPRN Radio, talkradio.com, just we're everywhere, Podbean, SoundCloud, the whole thing. So look us up, and we've got a bunch of great shows from our other co-hosts or hosts. So that'll wrap it up for tonight, Bernadine. Stay up, get creepy. There's a new terminus. It's called Worlds Unnamed. 2 a.m. tonight or tomorrow morning, depending on if you can tell time or not. So stay up and tune in. Don't forget, we are an iHeartRadio partner. We will be back next week, and we'll look forward to meeting with you then. Have a good weekend. Oh, and stay tuned. Miss Kathy Bilski is going to get high. Quantum Leap coming up next. Night, Bernadine.
Night, night.
Night, Joe.
Good night.
There he is. Goodbye.